We're in Proverbs chapter 5 this morning
with a message entitled Flirting with Folly. Flirting with Folly, Pursuing Death. Last week we looked at wisdom's wooing us to love her. There's a difference between flirting and loving, and this passage capitalizes on that. Proverbs chapter 5, we'll go ahead and read this chapter, even though we're going to deal with chapter 7 as well. I think it would be sufficient for us. The instruction part is given for us in chapter 5. Chapter 7 functions as an illustration. Proverbs chapter 5. My son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding, that you may keep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil, but in the end she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death, her steps follow the path to Sheol. She does not ponder the path of life, her ways wander, and she does not know it. And now, O sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the merciless, lest strangers take their fill of your strength and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. And at the end of your life, you groan when your flesh and body are consumed, and you say, how I hated discipline, and my heart despised reproof. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ear to my instructors. I'm at the brink of utter ruin in the assembled congregation. Drink water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the streets? Let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breasts fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her love. Why should you be intoxicated, my son, with a forbidden woman and embrace the bosom of an adulteress? For a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord. He ponders all his paths. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he's held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline. Because of his great folly, he is led astray. When you come to a text like this, we're all thankful that junior church is gone. You start thinking, should we take it up through like the 15-year-olds? You're working through a text like this, and you're just reading through it, and it gets a little bit explicit. As we come to a text like this, what I don't want us to do at all is to say, okay, this is for guys who struggle with sex. Okay, this is for people who struggle with pornography. What he's getting at in this is a personification of lady folly. Folly is something that you wrestle with whether you're a guy or you're a girl. Whether you're 14 years old or whether you're 90 years old, all of us default to folly. That's where this message is going. It's not just about sexuality, though it is about sexuality. But it's not just about sexuality, otherwise it would be just about morality. And so this text isn't just about being moral in your sexual arena, though it's not less than that. Please understand that. And that as we work through this passage, I want you to understand that we're not just shooting at the lowest common denominator here and saying, okay, boys be good and stay away from bad girls. Girls, be good and be careful how you interact with guys. That's not this message at all. Tim Challies, I think, helps us to understand a little bit what's going on. He's written recently a series of articles on the family. And what he points out is that family relationships convey very deep spiritual truths. He writes this, if we understand family, we have language and concepts that help us to understand certain truths about God and His works and His ways. But if we lose family or we redefine what family is, we begin to lose that language, and we begin to lose those concepts. No wonder Satan is so focused on attacking the traditional family. Let's think through this for just a second. Male and female, Okay, together, not one or the other, male and female together, conveys something real about the image of God. God is tough, strong, keeps on going when everything's working against him. God is tender and gentle. And both of those are who God is. Husband-wife relationship. It conveys something real about the relationship between Jesus Christ and the church. He's talking in Ephesians 5. He says, husbands, love your wives like you love your own body. And there's a great mystery as a husband and a wife, and they come together and they become one flesh. But I'm telling you something, I'm not really just talking about husband and wife. What God has given you is a grand drama of a spiritual reality that goes beyond anything you can imagine. God is entering into you, and you are entering into God, and he is making you one with himself. Does that blow your mind? If we lose husband-wife, if we lose male-female, we lose the language of our imagination, we lose the opportunity, we lose the ability to understand deep, deep spiritual truths. Father-son relationships convey something real about the one relationship within the Trinity, between the Father and the Son. And as the Son cries out from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? You feel the emotional tension as a son cries out to his father and a father gives up his son because he loves the world. A parent-child relationship conveys something real about our relationship to our father. A brother-sister relationship conveys something real about our relationships within the church. And so it is in this book of Proverbs when this idealized father within the covenant community speaks to his son about his relationships with women, he's speaking to him about more than just earthly relationships. Though he's not speaking to him about less than earthly relationships. Please understand me, okay? He's not using code language for something else. He's saying honestly, guys, guard your heart and be careful with your body. He's saying the same thing to women. But it's not just about your body. It's about your heart. Back in chapter 4, verse 23, the father has spoken to the son. He says, son, keep your heart with all vigilance. Out of your heart comes every issue in life. It's a wellspring. If you don't guard your heart, it's going to affect your eyeballs. If you don't guard your heart, it's going to affect your fingers. If you don't guard your heart, it's going to affect your feet. It's going to affect your ears. It's going to affect every part of your body. That's the context that the father brings this conversation to the son. And so it is. It's a deeply moving talk between a father and a son about the facts of life. And he's saying, son, there's more at stake here than you'll ever realize. You've got to guard your heart. What voice are you listening to? What voice are you listening to? As a variation on an earlier theme, the father is concerned that his son understands that our physical relationships reveal the spiritual condition of our heart. Right relationships are pursued by hearts that are governed by wisdom. Wrong relationships are pursued by hearts that are governed by folly. And in these two passages, which are at the center of this 9-chapter introduction in the book of Proverbs, we find that folly is personified as what's called the strange woman. We'll talk about that. What does he mean by the strange woman? In these two passages, the father's admonition is going to be rather simple. Well, we've seen last time, the son is out in the real world. He's got voices calling at him from every single direction. And wisdom positions herself at the gate before he comes into the big city. And says, listen, you're about to encounter more than you're ready to deal with. Son, listen to me. We've seen it from the ground floor perspective in chapter 8. In chapters 5 and 7, we're going to be seeing it from up above. As chapter 7 in particular, the father is going to be looking out the window. He's going to tell the story about a young man who got lost on the streets because he couldn't guard his heart. But he couldn't guard his heart because he didn't listen to the right words. And that's where this is all going. Okay? He didn't guard his heart because he didn't listen to the right words. The Father's admonition this morning is simply this: don't flirt with folly. Don't flirt with folly. Because what you love determines what you will become. What you love determines everything about you. It determines where you're going. It determines your direction. It determines your character. It determines your reputation. It determines your destiny. Don't flirt with folly. You can't afford it. You can't afford her. She will bring you to the grave. As we work through this, he's going to give us chapter 5, which is the instruction side of things. Then he's going to give us chapter 7, which is the illustration side of things. And I hope you're going to see there's a lot of continuity between the two passages. First, let's look at chapter 5. We're going to look first that there's a voice that you must avoid. Chapter 5. Verses 1 through 6. There's a voice you must avoid. My son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding so you may keep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge. He says, son, put on your hearing ears, okay? Listen to my words, because here's what my words will do for you. Verse 2, that you may keep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge, because the lips of a forbidden woman are going to be active. And he's going to go through and he's going to talk about this forbidden woman. Forbidden woman, it's a word that means peculiar, strange, not as though she were awkward or ugly, though she had a tooth missing from her head. It's not that kind of strange. The idea of the strange woman here is the woman who is not a part of the direction that this covenant community is going. So as the covenant community listens to the voice of God and orders their feet by the words of God and trains their heart to be in tune with the heart of God, led by a king named by God, a man after my own heart, the idea is that while the covenant community walking after God, their shepherd, following him one way, you've got this person who's walking the opposite direction. Strange. Doesn't fit in. Not going the same direction. Doesn't have the same values. That's the strange woman. That's this peculiar woman. That's this forbidden woman. When God calls me this way, she's walking the exact opposite direction. When God says, open up your ears, she's plugging them and singing her own tune. She's doing the exact opposite. He says, son, listen, you're going to have to be aware of this woman. And you think, why would I have to be aware of her? It's so obvious. We're all going this direction. She's the oddball going that way. Dad, this is going to be pretty easy. He says, son, let me introduce you to the facts of life. You don't know yourself. And you don't know her. He says, there's a voice that you're going to have to avoid. Let me tell you something about this woman. Verse 3, her lips drip honey. Might as well just dive in with the sensuality. He says, her mouth, son, is sweet. That lipstick there is inviting. Has the idea of tasting the inside palate of her mouth. She's ready to throw herself at you, son. He's using graphic language here with his son. He says, listen, she's ready to give you what you will think is sweet. Her speech is smoother than oil. Oh, son, listen. You want somebody who's going to stroke your ego? You want someone who's going to tell you what you want to hear? It's exactly what she's going to do. And you'll be totally disarmed because she's going to tell you what you want to hear. Now, again, understand, we are talking a lady and a young man. But we're talking about more than a lady and a young man. Okay? Think back to the Garden of Eden. Okay? Think woman and a snake. Satan's there in the body of a snake, speaking through the mouth of a snake. And he says, isn't this such a beautiful, beautiful fruit? And she's looking at this and she's trying to talk with him and reason with him and say, I can't have this fruit. And he says, oh, you know what? God really wants to keep this from you. You've got a stingy God. And she's listening to this snake and she says, you know what? Her eyes saw that this fruit was beautiful. It's luscious. It's good. And the snake tells her it will make her wise. Wise like unto God himself. This snake is speaking smoother than oil, telling her exactly what she wants to hear. And as soon as she grabs that fruit, takes that bite, boom, her eyes are opened, right? We're not just talking boy meets girl. We're talking the work of Satan in deceiving God's people from the very beginning. Do you understand that? Okay. So it's not that it's not talking about boys and girls, but it's talking about more than. It's talking about the agenda of Satan in trying to deceive us from the very beginning, getting our paths off the path of life, bringing us to a grave apart from God. He says, her lips drip honey, suggests the sensual pleasure of a kiss. But look down in verse 4. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood. You think, you know what honey tastes like. Think of some of the most disgusting, bitter, think of apple vinegar. Take a good old dose of apple vinegar. Okay, now, unless you're strange, you don't like that. Though I know some people like it, okay? You take that teaspoon of vinegar, like, curdles your eyeballs. It's weird, okay? He says, in the end, understand, you pucker up. You get close to her, she's got halitosis to the nth degree. You wish you hadn't puckered up for that one, buddy. But I'm trying to give you an illustration because he's trying to give us graphic pictures. He doesn't want you to just read this and say, oh yeah, heard that before, going to be careful, right, I'll check that off my list. He's trying to get you to experience. He's trying to get his son to think, listen, there's serious consequences. If you get involved with this one, if you lock lips with this lady, you'll wish you'd never done it. It's going to take you places you never thought you could go. He says, not only is her end bitter as wormwood, she's sharp as a two-edged sword. She talks smooth. But that smoothness only hides the sharp blade that cuts both directions. I'm telling you, son, don't get involved with Lady Folly. Don't listen to the lips that are speaking untruth and deceit, that are walking away opposite of wisdom and opposite of God, opposite of revelation, doing your own thing. Son, you can't afford it. And it's not just a woman. There's a devil behind her. And he's not going to make you do anything. It's going to be your choice. And you're going to walk into it with both eyes open. But your eyes will be opened in ways that you wish they were never opened if you go this direction. Her sweetness hides what bitter. Her smoothness hides what sharp. It continues to develop the picture of this woman. It says, her wandering hides her way. Verse 5, her feet go down to death. Her steps follow the path to the grave. Sheol is the grave. She does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander and she doesn't even know it. Her wandering hides her way. We're going to see in chapter 7, it talks about how her feet aren't at home. She's sometimes out in the street. Sometimes she's down in the marketplace. She's going this way. She's wandering. She's active. She's restless. She can't stay any. And as this young man is watching this lady, she's not going anywhere. She's going all places, but she's going nowhere. He says, son, her feet are taking her directly to the grave, and you're going to go right with her. I guarantee it. But her wandering, her meandering, her easygoingness, she's got time. She'll wait. She'll wait. And you've got no idea that she's treading on the verge of hell, of death, of destruction, of that which is opposite God. He says, son, it looks like she's just meandering and doesn't really know where she's going. But life is leading her right to death. Her ignorance hides her influence. She doesn't ponder the path of, she doesn't think. She doesn't take consequences into view. When our kids were small, we used to bump over the milk, orange juice, whatever it was. Okay. And that's what kids do. Okay, that's not sin. But as it continues to happen, you continue to train them not to bump the milk. And it happens again, and they say, "Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to," right? And that's the truth. I didn't mean to. But after a while, that's not good enough. I don't care that you didn't mean to. You must mean not to do this. Do you understand the difference? I don't care if you didn't mean to. It still happened. You've got to get to the place where you mean not to do that. Think of Mr. Vanderwater flying an airplane. There are a gazillion buttons in that airplane. What if he just happens to hit the eject button, which shoots him right through the roof of that plane? They don't have it on passenger planes, but let's say he did, right? He pushes the button, boom, he's out. Parachute's open. He's floating through midair. He says, "Oops, didn't mean to." Guess that was the wrong button. There's consequences. Even if you didn't mean to, there's consequences. Son, she doesn't mean to go there. She doesn't mean to go to the grave. She doesn't mean to have an eternity separated from God. But it doesn't matter. Because she doesn't mean to go God's direction. And son, if you get involved with her, unless you mean to go God's direction, you won't mean to end up where you end up, and you'll wish you'd never been there. He says, be careful for this woman. There's a voice you must avoid. There's a price that you will pay. He says now in verse 7, now sons, listen to me. Says it in the plural. This is for everybody, not just one, not just a certain personality type. In fact, emphasize again, this isn't even just for boys, okay? Y'all, listen. Do not depart from the words of my mouth. Don't listen to her mouth. Listen to the words of my mouth, which, again, every week we have to remember, the words of the Father, the words of wisdom are tied to the words of God. That's the whole point here. Listen to the words of my mouth. Verse 8, keep your way far from her. Don't go near the door of her house. Verse 9, lest you give your honor to others. The weight, the splendor, the majesty, the power, the influence of your life, you just take that and hand it over to somebody else because you know what? You're irrelevant. You're worthless. You're characterless. You're untrustworthy. You're going to just take everything that you've worked hard for and you're just going to hand it off to somebody else. He says your life is going to be loveless. Verse 9, your years will be given over to the merciless. Oh, she loves you, right? Yeah, she loves. She loves herself. She could care less about you. You're a dime a dozen to her. She's got one agenda, and that's herself. Satan has one agenda, and it's not you. He'll promise you a world. He'll promise you positions. He'll promise you wealth. He'll promise you happiness. He'll promise you, he'll promise you, he'll promise you. But one thing you can be sure of is that you will have a life that is loveless. You are not loved when you follow the lies of Satan. That's a whole difference. God says, you must go this direction, but his call isn't the command of a drill sergeant. It's the call of a father. You must come. Come this way, away from death. Follow my son to life. He says, son, your years will be handed over to those who care nothing about you. Verse 10, if you don't listen to my words, strangers will take their fill of your strength. Your resources will be drained. Everything that's an asset, gone. Flush it down the toilet, son. Just get rid of it now. That's what's going to happen. Your gains will be lost. Your labors will go to the house of a foreigner. Somebody who doesn't even live here. Somebody who doesn't even know your language. They're going to own and possess everything that you've worked hard for. Verse 11. Lest at the end of your life you groan when even your flesh and your body are consumed. Your health is going to be broken. The STDs. The hard life. The hard living. Oh, it's fun for a while. Till it's not. Son, there's consequences. There's going to be a price that you must pay. And it's not just a hard life of sex, okay? It's a hard life of indulgence. It's a hard life of walking away opposite God. So he says, son, you've got to be careful who you're listening to. There's Lady Wisdom who offers you life and riches and honor and health and wealth. Not a health and wealth gospel, but as you live life in accordance with the purpose and design of God, she's gonna breathe life into you. You're going to be like that tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season and its leaf doesn't wither. You listen to Lady Folly and you'll be like the unjust, the ungodly, which the wind drives away like chaff, empty, worthless, brittle, dry. Your health will be broken. Your memories will be nothing but regrets. Verse 11, at the end of your life you say, oh, how I hated discipline. How my heart despised reproof. I didn't listen. I did listen, but I listened to the wrong one. I didn't listen to my teachers. I didn't listen to my dad. I didn't listen to wisdom. I didn't listen to God. I listened to the wrong voice. Interesting. Eve listens to the wrong voice. Adam listens to the wrong voice. And when God speaks to Adam back in Genesis chapter 3, verse 17, he says, Adam, why did you listen to the voice of your wife rather than to me? Who you listen to is going to shape what your heart begins to take affection for. The more you listen to, with your ears or with your eyes, the more you listen to that internet, that siren song of the Victoria's Secret commercial that comes on that internet, you just glance at it. What you listen to will shape your heart. He says, son, listen. Listen to my voice. Listen to my voice. Listen. My voice speaks with God's voice. Okay? What you listen to will shape your heart. So listen this way, not that way. Your memories will be regrets. And end of verse 14, your ruin will be public. There's coming a day when that secret vice isn't going to be secret to anybody. Cat's out of the bag, and you can't push it back in. It's all out. Oh, I wish I could turn back time. I wish I could turn back the clock. I wish I could just listen. He says, son, listen now before you have regrets. Before you have regrets, because there is a price that you will pay. In verses 15 through 19, there is a source that you can enjoy. He says, son, sex isn't bad. Marriage, intimacy, it's good. And he's using language here. He talks about it as, well, look, verse 15, a cistern, a well, waters, streams, springs, fountains. He's talking about the sexual union of a husband and wife. He lists body parts. He said, listen, there is a place, there is a time, by God's design, okay? It's good. It's very good. In fact, he calls down a blessing on his own son. Look at verse 18. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth. God bless you, son. God bless you, daughter. Enjoy this aspect of God's creation. within the boundaries that God created for it. Listen to how God said, you should use your body. It's not yours, it's His. If He designed it a certain way, He gives you these certain restrictions, not because He's a killjoy, not because He thinks you're a moron. He just knows that you'll default to using it the wrong way. And so you read the instruction manual, and He says, use it this way and it won't be broken. Guess what? You use it that way, and it's not broken. He says this confinement of sex to marriage, this source is satisfying. You can drink from it. And the source is refreshing. It's flowing water. It's not stagnant water. The source is valuable. He says it's threatened. He says, why should this be scattered out in the streets? Why would you want strangers to partake of this? This is valuable stuff. You don't just throw this out in the street. You don't just let anybody come by and steal of this fountain. He said, this is yours. This is precious. God made you a man. God made you a woman. And He didn't make a mistake. And He didn't make you something in between. He didn't give you male body parts and really make you a female on the inside. That God doesn't work like that. There's two. He made you one or the other, and He decided you don't get to decide. And He didn't make a mistake in what He made you. And He calls you to use it the way that He designed it to be used. It's valuable. It's yours. It's a gift from God. This source is exclusive. He says, this is your own cistern, your own well. Verse 17, let them be for yourself alone. Okay, just a tip of the hat. Up in chapter 9, at the very center of the comparison between Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly, the whole point is going to boil down to this in verse 12. Listen, you've got a choice to make, and the consequences will be yours alone. Hear this father saying to the son, listen, this is a treasure. This is yours. Use it well. Guard it. Take care of it. Enjoy it. This source is blessed. This source is beautiful. It's lovely, graceful. The source is bountiful. He says, be filled at all times. Be intoxicated always. The word here, intoxicated, has the idea of, it has the idea of being knocked down drunk. Okay? It's the idea of being staggering, losing your wits. It's how you act when you first fell in love, right? You're looking at her and all of a sudden, whoa, you forgot, okay? Because you're preoccupied. That's the idea. It says, it's okay. That's good. You should be preoccupied. That's what I want. Now look at the end, verse 19. Rejoice with your wife like a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated always in her what? Raja, Raja, Raja. Love! Be intoxicated in her love. Not her infatuation. When you give yourself to a one-man, one-woman relationship, God locks you into a place of security where real love can happen. If you just shack up with someone, if you forget to forge those bonds of marriage and just play the marriage roles, take the marriage privileges without committing to the marriage responsibilities, you will never have love because all you have is somebody who loves themselves and will not sacrifice on your behalf. It's only in that context of marriage when you say, you know what? I commit to loving you more than I love me for the rest of my life, that you can enjoy a relationship where real love happens. You know what love looks like? By this we know love, because Jesus laid down His life for us. And so ought we to love our brothers. Husbands, love your wife as Christ loved the church. But you know what? It's only in that context of self-sacrifice that love can take place. You toy around with it. You take the privileges without the responsibilities. You'll never know what love is. It's not there. This is a source that you can enjoy, and there are some truths. There are some truths that you cannot escape. Verses 20 through 23, end of the chapter. Son, why should you be intoxicated, lose your balance, be staggering drunk over this forbidden woman? Why? Why? Intellectually, sexual sin does not make sense. He asks just one question. Why? What are you thinking? This question emphasizes that sexual sin is a choice. Can I say that again? Sexual sin is a choice. It's not inevitable. Even in this highly sexualized era that we live in today, with all of the IT information that we have, all of the access to the images that are available to us, sexual sin is still a choice. He said, why? Why would you do that? You don't have to. Why would you? Don't go there. Because she doesn't belong to God's people. She's the forbidden woman. She's walking the opposite direction. She's the adulteress. This is a different word, has a little bit different twist. It has the idea of being a foreigner. It's the idea that she belongs to somebody else. Son, if she doesn't belong to you, if she's not wearing your ring, you have no right to her. But she's my girlfriend. She's not your wife. But she's my... Is she your wife? If she's not your wife, she doesn't belong to you. Don't touch her. Don't look at her in ways that you only reserve for a wife. She belongs to somebody else. Intellectually, sexual sin doesn't make sense. Objectively, sexual sin is witnessed. He says there in verse 21, why would you do this? Because a man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord. God's eyes are open, son. He sees where you're going. He watches what you're clicking on. He watches where your eyes are going as you walk by magazines in the rack. He sees. He knows. And it says, end of verse 21, he ponders all your paths, son. He takes them in a scale. He weighs them. He examines them. He tries them. He proves them is the idea. Objectively, sexual sin is witnessed by one who's very objective in his discernment. Experientially, sexual sin is enslaving. Verse 22, the iniquities of the wicked ensnare him. Without one's knowledge, they all of a sudden, that sexual sin that you thought you could control, pew, it controls you. Now, in this context, he's talking about sexual sin, but bigger picture, he's talking about sin in general. Oh, I can tell a little lie. Really? You can control that lie, can't you? That's why you had to tell a bigger one the next time to cover the little lie that you told in the first place. You see where this is going? This isn't just about sex. This is about sin. This is how sin works. But this is especially how sexual sin works. You think you can control it? Never. It controls you. I was just talking with a pastor friend 2 weeks ago. He was talking about a counseling situation, and he said, medical doctors in my church verify that sexual stimulation is more addictive than crack cocaine and the most addictive opioid. Sex does that. It's addictive. Well, I can control. You can't control anything. It will control you. It ensnares him. Beyond one's strength, it holds him fast. But here's the biggest thing. It's by your own doing. He is held fast in the cords of his own sin. Folks, if you make a pattern to listen to God and acknowledge him in all your ways, he'll direct your paths. If you don't mean to listen to God, you will unmeaningly end up ensnared, held fast by choices that are of your own making. I didn't mean to, but you didn't mean not to. Morally, sexual sin is tragic. It costs a man nothing. Verse 23, he dies for lack of discipline. He dies because he didn't put pieces in place to listen and to strive toward righteousness. The idea here is that he refuses to listen to the instruction and change his direction. Sin becomes his default mode. It costs a man nothing. It proves a man empty because of his great folly. Not just folly, great folly. This is actually worse than just being void of good. This is being filled up with bad. Because of his overflowing stupidity is actually how one translation translates this. Because of his overflowing stupidity, he ends up being led astray. It gets a man lost. He has no idea where he's going. He makes a mistake without considering the consequences. He chooses a path without considering its destination. And in the end, it leaves a man dead. Physically, spiritually. Didn't we just witness this? Mr. Epstein? Trafficking? And sexual sin? Oh, it's fun! We've got an entire island dedicated to the sport. But in the end, he's dangling from his own bed, unable to face the consequences to the choices that he made. That's the instruction. Son, there's a voice that you must avoid. There's a price that you will pay. There's a source that you can't enjoy. And there's rules you can't break. There's truths that you can't escape. Now, he's going to tell his son a story. Chapter 7. Here we come to the tragic tale of a heedless heart. Okay. Again, a story that's wound up in the very gutter. Talking about sexual sin, but talking about more than sexual sin. He's talking about sin. He's talking about folly. He's talking about listening to the wrong voice when God calls you this way and listening to a voice that calls you to go the opposite direction. The father tells a story. Chapter 7. Chapter 5 is the instruction. Dr. Olala back in Northland used to say, listen, the time you think the answer to dealing with a deer in the road is before you ever have to deal with a deer in the road. Okay? Let me give you the instruction. When you see a deer in the road, hit the deer. Because trees don't move, deer do. Okay? So before that deer is ever on the road, you decide, what do I hit? The deer? Because if you choose to not hit the deer, you're going to hit a tree. That's all that's there. Okay? You deal with this up front. So chapter 5 is the father saying, listen, let's think about this before it happens. Now, chapter 7 is going to be the illustration, if you will. Al Mohler suggests that a man doesn't just dive into adultery. He slips into it with ease, and he gives us 6 E's. He says, adultery starts with eliminating intimacy. That's emotional withdrawal. Then there's the encounter, the unexpected pleasure. Then there's enjoyment, the emotional indulgence. Then there's the expedition, the creating opportunities to make that presence happen. Then there's the expression, the verbal confession. Hey, this is pretty sweet. You're pretty neat. Then there's the experience of the physical satisfaction. Watch how this kind of plays out in chapter 7. My son, it's the same instruction. Keep my words, keep my commandments, and live. Verse 5, in order to keep you from the forbidden woman, listen to me so you don't end up listening to her. Verse 6, because at the window of my house I've looked out through my lattice. I've seen among the simple, I've perceived among the youths, a young man. A man with all of his life in front of him, lacking sense. He passed along the streets near her corner. He takes the road to her house in the twilight, in the evening, at the time of night and darkness. And behold, the woman we've been talking about, she meets him, dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart. She's loud, wayward. Her feet don't stay at home. Now she's in the street, now in the market. At every corner she lies in wait. She seizes him and kisses him, and with bold face she says to him, I had to offer sacrifices. Today I've paid my vows, so now I've come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly, and now I've found you. I've spread my couch with coverings, colored linens from Egyptian linen. I've perfumed my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of loves, plural there, till morning. Let us delight ourselves with loves, for my husband's not at home. He's gone on a long journey. He took a bag of money with him. At full moon, he'll finally come home. So with much seductive speech, she persuades him. With her smooth talk, she compels him. And all at once, he follows her. Like an ox goes to the slaughter, or a stag is caught fast till the arrow pierces its liver. Like a bird rushing into a snare, he doesn't know that it will cost him his life. Now, sons, listen to me. Be attentive to the words of my mouth. Let not your heart turn aside to her ways. Don't stray into her paths. For many a victim she's laid low. All of her slain make up a mighty throng. Her house that I told you not to go near is the way to Sheol, going down to the very chambers of death. Here's a man without intimacies. Who is he? He's a simpleton. He's one who lacks experience, but he's a youth. He's one who has a future. But he lacks sense. He's one who is in great danger. Where does he go? He passes along the street. In fact, he goes near her corner. In fact, he goes right to her house. When does he go there? In the twilight. In the evening. The time of night. Darkness. At the end of the day. When the time is his to spend in any way he sees, where should he be? He should be in a place of intimacies that are helping him, like iron sharpening iron, moving this direction. He's just gonna see what's out there. He's just gonna test the waters. He's just gonna take a little stroll. He's gonna see how close he can get. I wonder if those teeth really hurt. He's going to stick his feet in the pond. And then there's that illicit encounter. Look there in verse 10. And behold, the woman meets him. Oh, duh. I wonder what I'm going to see if I look inside this cover. No way. I went there. She meets him. That encounter. Externally, she's dressed like a prostitute, but internally, she's wily of heart. That is, she's guarded. Son, enjoy your wife, because she's got a heart that's yours. She's transparent. You can have love. This woman, you can have her body, but you'll never have her heart. Never. There won't be a oneness, because that's not what she even knows how to do. Habitually, she's loud. She speaks her mind. She's wayward. She's restless. She's shifting about. She's bold-faced. That is, she's brazen, defiant, and impudent. You're not going to tell her what she's going to do. Oh, I love you, baby. But not enough to sacrifice, not enough to listen. I love me more than I love you, baby. Do my own thing. Then there's that fatal expression. She speaks to him. She talks to him. Oh, she's got piety, but it's a false piety. Listen, I've sacrificed. I've made my vows. There's false flattery. I've come to meet you. Oh, honey, I come to seek you. I found you. I've been looking for you. Me? What a lucky guy. Oh, come to my house. I got all these luxuries. I got beds and couches and coverings and linens and perfumes and jalopies and canned beans, and it's cheap. It's fake. There's a false intimacy. She says, come on, let's take our fill of loves. Delight ourselves with loves. Come on, let's fill ourselves up. This is the exact same language that the Father told the Son. You can have this with your wife. You can have this in the God-ordained structure that He gives to you. You can have this. You don't need her. But isn't that what Satan always does? Just eat this one little fruit. Just eat this one little fruit. It will make you wise like God. Oh, at a price you can't afford. And with much seductive speech, she persuades him. She persuades him because he listens to her. The fatal experience. All at once, verse 22, all at once he follows her. Three pictures he gives: an ox going to slaughter, a stag caught till the dart strikes its liver, a bird in a snare getting ready for its neck to be wrung. Son, take a good look at this. I've watched this out my window. I've seen it happen more than once. Man, standing in the middle of Times Square, all these voices screaming at him. What am I going to do? I wonder what happens if I go this way. I wonder what happens. All these three metaphors or similes really give one picture: death. It will cost him his life. The closing instruction then is the provision of his words. Verse 24, now sons, listen to me. Be attentive to the words of my mouth. Listen. Be attentive to the words of my mouth. I'm calling you forward. My call is to bring you the same direction as wisdom. My call is to bring you the same direction as God. Listen to my words so that you won't listen to her words. Listen to my words because my words, verse 25, will protect your heart. Don't let your heart turn aside to her ways. Listen to my words. My words give you God's ways. Friend, are we talking about sex? Yes. Guys, I can't plead with you enough. Keep your heart pure. Keep your eyes clean. Save yourself for home. Young men, old men, doesn't matter your age. Guys, guard your hearts. Women, guard your hearts. You're not turned on by the same stuff that guys are, but emotionally, you are hungry. Just like guys are hungry. And that's good. God made us hungry, but He made us hungry for Him. He made us to have hungers that are satisfied within His boundaries. Guard your heart by listening to the right words. Don't flirt with folly. Because what you love determines what you become. Let's pray.